Your number one internet radio station.
Exquisite Podcast Radio Network. www.eprn.us.
Welcome to a new season of Black Fathers of Modern Black Civics series. An interview with a black firearm instructor, dealer, and trainer, and camp owner, by Lion Rowe, also known as Mr. Engaging Black, on the Twitter handle. And today, we'll be continuing our Black Fathers of Modern Black Civic series here on EPRN. I'm your host today, Roland Dunham, Lion Rowe. And today's show is being brought to you by our listeners here at Black Star Political Party, Exquisite Podcast Radio Network, and Lions Club of New London, Connecticut. I would like to inform our listeners that I will be hosting the show and looking for a co-host that will meet the criteria in which our brand backs, which is Black Empowerment. I would like to thank Brother Garland for supporting my vision with that being said, let me introduce my guest, Mr. William Rose. Mr. William.
Oh, how you doing?
Nice to meet you. And this is Mr. Rose. But before he introduced himself, I would like to give a backstory on how we met. On a previous show, I made mention that I was going through the process of applying for my pistol permit. In the search of applying for my training, I decided to search for a local black-owned gun dealer for certification. I have worked in the field of private security for more than a decade, and I want to explore armed and personal bodyguard aspect of security. So possibly to open my own firm one day. With that being said, I would like you to meet my guest, Mr. William Rose, and you can please introduce yourself to the listeners here on EPRN.
How you doing? I'm Will Rose, owner and founder of PMC Firearms.
All right. If you can you please give a brief introduction about yourself, Mr. Rose?
No problem. I'm a former Marine Corps soldier. I'm a vet, actually. I have over 23 years of law enforcement experience.
Thank you for your service, sir.
You're welcome. And now I'm a nuclear armed security supervisor. So I've been in law enforcement security most of my adult life.
All right. What made you get involved with security and law enforcement, if you mind me asking?
As a kid, I was fascinated about police officers, how they help people, how they enforce the law, and just the respect that people gave them. I'm talking back in the 70s. It's transitioning and changed now, but I'm looking at it from a view of a young kid. And I just was fascinated. I always wanted to be there. I thought that those guys are heroes. You know, they risk their lives, they help people, and they go home and they're normal people. So it fascinated me. So that's where it all sprouted from. I got out of high school. I went straight in the military right after graduation from high school, like a month after I graduated. I did 4 years in the military. I liked it, but I still had that vision of being a police officer. So once I got out, I became a police officer, and that's where all my whole law enforcement career started.
Can I backpedal on something? I have a question for some of our viewers and stuff, not to be rude. How come you didn't explore military police? My father was interested in military police at one time. How come you never explored that versus being civilians? I know that there's a difference of that nature. I'm just...
The reason why I never actually stayed in. I wasn't in military police. You really don't pick your MOS, which is the military occupational specialty. You don't really pick that. It's what they have open and what you score on your test scores, which I was way above what needed to be an MP, but they didn't have an MP at that time. So I was in the communications more, which you need a higher score to get. When I got out, I was in the reserve. I was actually in the Army Reserve with a military unit in Orangeburg, New York. but I didn't like it. It just wasn't fulfilling enough for me. It's more lax than municipality police and civilian police, as we call it. And when you're in the military, you're pretty much under contract. So you're basically, I mean, honestly, you're military property. I just didn't like the way that was set up. I didn't like the terms of it. So I wanted to be more freer and be able to be the type of law enforcement person that I wanted to be. You know, of course, there's guidelines, but you still kind of make your own way and deviate the way that's fit best for you to perform your job. So that's the reason why I went into civilian policing and not military policing.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that and help understand that, because there might be some viewer that might be young that might want to go down some of these roads, and they might actually want become a future officer or a future MP or anything of that sort. So thank you.
Yeah, it's great, actually. If you want, it's like a twofold. If you want to stay in the military, but you want to be a police officer too, well, that's a good way to go. I mean, that's a real good way, and it gives you a stepping stone, because once you get out and you decide to get into the civilian regular world, you have all that schooling, all that experience to get you where you need to be for civilian police.
Okay. Also, you were discussing a little bit more about, like, once you left the military, you got into more of the civilian police and stuff. Explain that transition, and what was that like for some of my viewers that might be veterans and stuff of that nature? Because I know that there is a transition period that you guys might go through, especially, like, if you mind me asking, if that's true.
I wouldn't say transition. You can go right out of the military and go right into policing, like I did, like 6 months after. It's when you take the test. You just need to decide what you want to do. You want to be a police officer, whatever job you might want to have as a civilian, you need to decide that so you can be able to, and that position or that job be available for when you get out. So you got to research that while you're in the military. You know, if you get a date when your contract expires, meaning when you get out of the military, at that time you find out, or you know, you should start looking for a civilian job, whatever you want to do at that point. I was fortunate to know, like, when I was getting out, and like 90 days before I had my exit date, I went out and started seeking, you know, police jobs or whatever, and taking the test and going through the process. So when I got out, it wouldn't be a stagnant time period. I can just go right into one thing and go into another. You know, that's just the way I work. It might not work for everybody else, but, you know, I like to get into something. I don't like gaps between things. I want to go out of one thing and get into another, and it works for me. But you can plan it totally different if that's what you want to do. You just got to do what works for you and what's importantly available when you get out.
I think you might have mistaken what I meant by transition. Like, what are some of the education that you use to prep yourself so that you can be successful in that, like, once you change gears from the military? That's what I meant by transition.
I'm sorry.
Did you go to college? Did you, what extra training that you might have done that might be useful for my younger listeners or younger people, that so that they can say, hey, I can relate to that, or I can be able to position myself in high school, you know?
No, honestly, the military is a great basis for law enforcement. You're getting the discipline, you're getting some firearm training. It's not a lot, depending on what your military specialty is, but you're getting some. You're getting a base of some kind of weapon training. Definitely the discipline, the responsibility. You know, they groom you as a young person to be very responsible. You might get in some combat experience, you know, where, you know, you see some serious combat, you see, you know, some fatalities, hopefully not, but it could happen. So it gets you ready and prepared for that. It's like a structure, a foundation for whatever you want to get into when it comes to law enforcement. So that's definitely the best base you can get going into the military. That's why when you go to police departments, you apply, they give you a veteran status, meaning that if you're a veteran, you get extra points towards your testing score, because they know you already have the basis of what they're looking for. As far as schooling, I went to college afterwards. I took courses to all do my law enforcement career. So that's how I got my education.
Did some of that schooling and education help prepare? You said that military actually helped you with the discipline aspect and stuff of that nature. But Also, like, I noticed that for like higher up, like if you want to become a sergeant and stuff of that nature, does that require college education? Am I correct?
Some requires a college degree, actually, not education, a degree.
College
Like
degree, yeah.
When you get into admin level, like lieutenant, most departments want you to have at least a bachelor's. But you can do that as you progress in your law enforcement. You got years before you even qualify to even sit in those positions or even apply for them. So during that gap of space from when you start in law enforcement to that point, you could be going to college part time. Most people go part time, you know, because depending on what you do in the military, you don't have time actually to go to college or take college courses. They're available, but you just don't have that time to do it. So you got to go with what was presented to you in your life, and you work your way around that. You know, some might have the time to go to college full time and be in the military, but some like myself didn't have that time. You know, so I had to wait till I got out, and then I started, you know, taking my courses to get that education.
Thank you for clarifying and pointing out both out. Or do you think both of them are very important, both the military aspect as well as the college? Or do you think one should weigh out more than the other? You can be honest if you mind me asking.
No, it's like this. Far as I'm concerned, I think you should get as much education as possible. You think about it. It's analysis. You got basketball player LeBron James, prime example. He had the ability to be a pro out of high school. Could he have went to college? Of course he have went to college. But this is just my opinion and just my thought. I think maybe he didn't do it because he didn't want to get hurt in college and not be able to be be a selection for the pros. Nobody's going to take a wounded, you know, a injured, always injured basketball player and want to pull him into the pros. So he didn't want to take that chance. So he went straight from high school right into the pros. So it depends that, and that works for him. So it depends on your situation and what you want to do, you know? You always got to go by what's in your life. Things in your life happen and you can't control, and you're in a situation where you got to modify your plans or how you want to do things prior.
Okay. All right. And now I'm going to start really getting into some of the questions. And thank you for the brief introduction about some of the skill sets that you had to offer and some of the things that you're about being a previous law enforcement veteran who served this country. That's a great thing. Those are very, very positive things for black men to be a part of. With that being said, like I see that you did touch upon how did you get into the firearms training and dealing. Half of it seemed like the basis of it was through the military, I guess, from what's being presented, as well as being serving in law enforcement. Am I correct?
Yes. As far as you're saying, as far as dealing firearms,
Yes,
is this
dealing
what you? Okay.
firearms. Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
Yeah, I can
I'm so
clarify that for
sorry
you.
for miss. Yes. Yes, I'm so sorry.
Yeah,
Yes,
I'll
dealing
clarify that
firearms.
for you. As far as being an FFL licensee, I didn't do it because of the military. I had weapons way before I even got into this. I've been dealing weapons now. I've been a dealer for a little bit over a year, so it had really nothing to do with my military or even my professional history. What geared me to do that is I started just doing research. Just something when I get my mind fixated on things, I just start researching, and I get into it to find answers. That's just the way I work. So I was wondering, I was going to these gun shops, and this is honest truth. And this is not in racism, so don't take this the wrong way. It's exactly how I'm saying it. I've been buying guns, you know, for a long time, and since I've been living in Connecticut, I've been buying different guns from different shops. I have never seen an Afro American man in any shop, not even working and helping. This is just me. I could have missed it, but I, far as I know, I have never seen Afro American, definitely not owning a shop or even working with one. So it boggled me. I was like,
Okay.
what the heck is going on? What is going on? So I start. Oh, go ahead.
Okay, I wanted to touch upon that a little briefly, a little bit more. I grew up in a culture. My father, who recently passed, he was a 2A, he 2A person, as in he practices Sixth Amendment rights. I grew up with him, watching him cleaning his guns, going to the range. I was a little bit young, so I wasn't as interested as much until I got older. Why do you think it's a necessity for black people to participate and getting their Second Amendment rights and bearing arms.
Well, first, I'd like to say I'm sorry for your loss.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, his birthday recently passed.
Yeah,
so
my birthday's coming
you.
Up actually.
That means a lot.
Welcome. Well, I think it is because, I mean, we complain about our, we complain and we lobby about our all our rights that we're supposed to have that we're not getting honored by or recognized. You say that we have problems for us to exercise our right. 2A is the only right that I think that we let slip by, and a right that we still have, that everybody's have, that you can't discriminate. You understand what I'm saying? You can't discriminate of getting your pistol permit unless you don't fall in those guidelines and of qualifications that's written. It's written. You can't go away from it. It's the clearest written qualifications that you could probably see in anything that you want to apply for, even the driver's license. You know, so and it just bothers me how people of color don't take advantage of that.
I think it's a twofold situation. I wouldn't really just say that black people don't want to participate. There are some black
I didn't say all. What I'm saying is, if you look at the percentile and percentage, right now it's at a high. But you look at 2 years ago. Look at 2 years ago. And there's reasons why. It's not all of people of color fault. It's sometimes the situation they're in. But this is why I'm saying, even the people who can do it, who qualify, they don't apply for it. Just recently, in the last 2 years, we have more gun sales than any other race. People of color have superseded that. But only 2 years ago. If you look back in the history, we was probably the lowest.
Well, I hear you on what you're saying, but didn't the Connecticut Defense League have a recent lawsuit with the current I'm going to say four police chiefs in various different sectors of Connecticut regarding them not giving people their pistol permits in a timely fashion. And this works this way up to federal court.
I'm not familiar with that. If you say that happened,
that
it's true. But
yeah, that was fairly recently.
Okay, but
that was
I'm sorry. Was that people of color or was it just...
This was not just black people that were affected by this. This was white people. This is people across the board.
Okay. Now you said
affected.
That.
So like when you say that there are instances where people do have their rights violated or they don't have their rights fully exercised because people don't give them that opportunity. That was
well, you can
I
say,
wanted to highlight.
But you can say that. But that's in a whole broad band. That's every facet and color, because you just said that. That's every facet and color, but it doesn't mean that it's not. It doesn't mean that the least percentage were people of color who apply for that. You wouldn't know that. You wouldn't know that unless you was the person actually processing the application. That when it comes to 2A, it has nothing to do with color. I think. I think it's just, they just don't want a lot of people with firearms in their person. You know, it's not as much as they say color, because you can't say as much as saying your race, because you have to apply and that has to be documented and say, hey, so amount of people of color apply and they was never granted a permit for whatever reason it might be.
When you had like the Black Panthers who stormed hypothetically,
exactly,
as an example. They recently made laws right afterwards to combat saying that you can't do that. So that looks very racial to some people. Yeah, I hear what you're saying, and that was basically used to disproportionate black people with firearms. And then the NRA did not protect them, unfortunately.
But we have MAGA. National Afro American Rifle Association. You don't have to deal with NRA. There's so many different other organizations you could deal with that people of color has started. It don't have to be NRA. I mean, why would you deal with NRA when you have another party
no,
that's representing?
I'm saying I know that's good that you brought them up, but I'm saying during that time frame, that was the only option, and that was
that's
during
true.
The 60s and
that's
the
70s. True. But
so
that's
when you
true,
have
but.
That as the only option, and they're not representing black people, and these black people did pay for, like, my father was an NRA member. He paid. This was before they had other alternatives that were out there for black people to participate in. So,
these
are
that's
people
true,
who pay their dues, who pay their memberships and such, and they don't get the common respect. They didn't. They were ignored. They got their rights violated. And yeah, I'm sorry.
That's true, but that was then and this is now. We can't speak on an era which I totally respect because they set the plateau for us. But we can't speak on something that happened a while ago. It was not going to benefit us. We learned from that. So if that happened, you would say, hey, we gotta start our own organization, and that's why NAGA was started. Just reasons like the mm-hmm. stuff you're following through. So we're gonna move up to what's going on now. I love to stay, and I always try to stay in the present and look at the future. I don't really look at the back part of it or the past because it's not going to do anything from it. If you don't learn from it, then you just need to get off the train. You have to deal with what's in front of you and what you foresee that's coming. You can't think about the past because you just learn and grab what you get to grab and you let it stay where it is. That's why it's called the past, and you work on what's in front of you and what's in the future. So now we're in the present now. There's a lot of things there's a lot of organizations out there just geared for people of color. You know, you can't use what happened before as an excuse because now you're impeding yourself. You're putting yourself in that one set position, and you're never moving or doing anything, and so you're not going to progress because you're right in there. You're enslaving yourself to be right there. Put it that way, if you understand what I mean. You're enslaving yourself to be right there, and you're never going to progress, to learn anything, or to better your situation. And that's real, and it's true. So you gotta say, hey, you know what? Our forefathers had this problem. Okay, we learn from this. So that's why they do things, so you can learn. We're not going to go this road. We're going to try a new road. And that's how you progress. And that's why NAGA progressed, because they took a different road. So now we have the avenues and we have things we didn't have 30 years ago. So we should utilize them. But people are not utilizing everything, all the resources we have. You think about it.
I would. Yeah, I definitely want us, for the constraint of time, I definitely want us to touch more into NAGA. If we can we definitely tie that in towards the end a little bit more? Because
sure.
I would definitely want our viewers and our listeners to know where they can reach out, like a contact information if you have it, or even to get in contact with you for these type of organizations, because these are very important. Instead of them running to NRA, who not going to help us, why don't you go to somebody who's in our best interest? That's what we're kind of about on this channel.
But you got support. You know my motto. You know I tell you all the time. You support who supports you.
Yes.
You support who supports you. I'm sorry, go ahead.
You also made mention that off the record that you would like to properly educate and train the black community when it comes to firearm safety. What made you interested in helping the black community when it comes to firearm safety? I saw that you touched upon some of it.
Well, first and foremost, I want to help my people. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I love everybody. I love everybody, no matter what color you are. You know, my partner, she's Caucasian. It has nothing to do with that. But I want to help my people because I see them lacking. And if I see them lacking in something, and I have the ability and I have the resource to help them, I'm going to help them. You know, I just see that, you know, you get these kids here that get into these gun incidents, you know, these firearms, you know, they hurt themselves and shoot themselves because the parents are not properly securing these firearms. Or they don't know the knowledge of a firearm. They don't know what a firearm can do. You know, and you get a lot of kids out here that's handling firearms illegally. You know, some of that part reason is because they were never introduced to it. They didn't know how to respect the firearm, and they had interest in it, but their parents wouldn't show them. You know, you got to think about why you think when you see the NRA when they have these young kids on there shooting 22s at 6 years old, 7 years old. Why do you think they're doing it?
Well, I think that they're doing it That's a multi-prone answer, depending on what race, culture. It's not people of color. That's a good thing, but that's not a good thing. What I mean is, that is a good point, I meant. Yes, it's not black people that's participating in these type of things, and they should be. I do agree with you on that.
Exactly. You can't.
But also, it's more of an American culture.
We're Americans, and we should
be participating in it because that is a part of. And that's what I want to insinuate it on. And I do agree with you on that.
Because you figure our ancestors from Africa, they use spears. Okay, we're in America. We're African Americans. We don't use spears though in this country. We use firearms. So it's the same concept, just a different weapon. So our ancestors had weaponry. It's just not what we have in America. It's a different culture and a different time. You know, so if they exercised their rights, even though they didn't have such thing as 2A, but it still was a right for them to bear their type of arms, which was spears, or knives, whatever they may have used, we have that same right. You know, we're first to push, oh, we're African, we need to get into African heritage and culture. That was an African culture, weaponry. How do you think they defended themselves and hunt and all that stuff? We're having a firearm here, use it for hunting. Use it to defend yourself. It's the same concept. But people don't look at it that way. And you have this right to be able to do that and teach your kids and educate them on weaponry. Your kid might want to be a professional shooter. It's a sport, too. He might want to be a police officer. Who knows? He might wind up saving your life if an intruder come in your house because you educate him with that firearm. And that's what I'm saying. And it's a source and a way to bring families together. Look how our families are. And I'm not just talking about people of color. You know, nobody eats together no more. Nobody really does anything. Kids stay on these playing these video games, these shooting games, and all this stuff. And they're so fantasized by them. And they people understand they're actually getting mentored by a video game. That's their mentorship, a video game.
And I kind of agree with you on that. Video game does not have any of the human components that's needed for something like
None.
That.
Therefore, nothing positive.
It comes off as a lack of respect overall for that tool and whatever you're using. And I hear you on that. I definitely agree with you on that.
You know, they should be, if they like firearms, well, teach them the right way, not shooting cops and how they see all this cursing and prostitution. You know, this, I forgot what it's called, this video game that everybody go crazy. They've been going crazy since they made so many versions of it.
You talking about
stealing cars. Exactly. Who will let their kid, what do you want your kid to be playing that stuff? You could be taking your kid likes weapons, take them out and show them how to shoot. Teach them the safety, teach them how to respect that weapon, but you sitting there letting them go in a video game. That video game is influencing this kid. This kid is actually thinking that he could really do that in real life, and people don't get the concept. Mm-hmm. You grooming your kid already to fail.
Setting them up for failure. I'm gonna definitely break this one off for an interview break, not for a break, and for commercials, and then we're gonna come back and definitely talk a little bit more about some of the self defense and stuff of that nature, okay. And the other questions that are lined up as well. So, if you can, we just take a quick small break.
Have you ever wondered how your shoes are made? Ever wondered about the quality and craftsmanship involved in making them? What you wear on your feet is important. That's why I prefer to style and profile in my pair of Black Star Politic sneakers. Go to aliveshoes.com/brand/blackspolitic. Distinguish and separate yourself from the rest with your style. Check out the latest shoe and sneaker designs created not only to support your feet, the footwear also supports the efforts of the Black Star political party movement. Enter a new era of empowerment, all while wearing your pair of Black Star Politic or Lady Black Star handcrafted shoes and sneakers. Order yours at aliveshoes.com/brand/blackspolitic. Black Star Fund Triple LP isn't your typical business services B2B specialty business. As you may have noticed, we love handling complex problems for businesses. Alternative business lending, precious metals banking, business and personal credit restoration services. These are just a few of our B2B services. Get started and go to BlackStarFundLLP.com. That's BlackStarFundLLP.com. In case you're wondering, Triple LP stands for Limited Liability, Limited Partnership. My name's Garland L. McLaughlin, also known as the Consulting Guy, and I'm also the Managing General Partner with Black Star Fund, LLLP, providing business to business services for your business certainly involves trust and partnership. Our services are ideal for small and mid-range businesses with 3 years or more of operating experience. Startups are also welcome to inquire about startup loan programs and other consultative business services. Let's start off with a confidential conversation related to your business. Book your 30-minute consultation and let's talk. Give me a call at 980-201-9878 or just fill out the contact form at BlackStarFundLLLP.com.
All right, we definitely want to get back, Mr. Rose. You mentioned more about self-defense, making sure that we educate our children about self-defense. I'm a major fan of self-defense. I think that's a good thing. But some people might be afraid due to the fact of how, in the courtroom, how we're treated when it comes to self-defense, as in black people. Do you think that that is, plays a factor into that situation?
No. I mean, because we as people, we're people of color, we're going to always have obstacles. That's just what reality is for us. But we're strong people. I mean, to say that, that's like you saying, if I walk the streets of, New London, a cop's going to definitely pull me over. I mean, definitely going to harass me, and I'm going to probably get arrested for something. You can't think that way. You can't think that way. You can be smarter, but you can't think that way, because that's just a way of impeding you from doing what you want to do. You should never be scared to do what you want to do. As long as you, in your mind, you know it's legal, you should never be scared. You should never be scared, because that's enslaving you mentally. Now you're saying to yourself, I can't do this, but you've seen somebody else do it. You know, if you know it's lawful, you can do it. You just have to educate yourself. Education is important. Educate yourself on the gun laws and what you can do and your city ordinance. And you would be untouchable. But when you don't educate yourself, everything you do is a question, and you second guess it. Of course you're not going to do it, because you don't know if you can do it or not. So it's more an education thing. Most of our leaders who were successful, I'm not saying they didn't get assassinated, but they were successful and was very fair, was educated leaders. People think that is more brawn and no, it's your way of thinking. Anybody could be physically tough or physically do harm to anyone. But when you got a strong mind, you're dangerous. So you have to educate yourself, not be lazy and listen to what somebody else telling you and you can't confirm it. With me, when somebody tell me something that I don't know for sure, you know what I do? I go and research it to make sure they know what they're talking about. I'm not going to act on what somebody tells me that when I know definitely I'm not 100% sure it's true. And that's with anybody. I don't care what nationality you is.
Okay. What are some? I'm going to lead to one of some other questions because I definitely want to be respectful of your time.
That's cool.
What are some of the qualifications that make you verse on firearm safety? You did touch upon some of your military experience and as well as your law enforcement experience. But what if somebody is like an average Joe, like an average black person who doesn't have, that's not really a part of that, but they have a curiosity towards firearms? Do you think that that's the only way that they should get that type of training?
Well, I think I think the first thing you should do, it depends on what you're looking for. If you're looking for someone of color to be trained by, then you find someone of color that has that cert, that whatever you're looking for, shotgun, pistol, combative pistol, you know, it's different avenues of which way you can go as far as self-defense. You can go to learn some hands-on. It don't have to be karate. It could be grappling. There's so much stuff, and there's so much array of things that you can actually learn, but you got to figure out what's going to fit you and what you like doing. Or you just try and dip into different things, and you say, hey, I don't like that, but I like this. It works for me. So it depends on the person. I mean, there's so much stuff available out there for people. They just have to just apply and inquire and do it. Like, for example, I get a lot of people that's taking my courses. Like a lot of women, a lot of people of color, a lot of, you know, I'm a multifaceted person. I don't really care what color you are. If you're a good person, I feel you're a good person, I'm going to train you. You know, I don't pick and choose who I'm training unless you just not, I think that you're not going to use this for a positive and a good thing, then I will refuse to train you. But I mean, knock on wood, that never happened to me. I will train you. I think that you just need to find out what works for you. I think if you're going to get into firearms, you should get into some type of on-hands training too, meaning like some type of self-defense training, you know, with hands, not just a weapon, because you never know what situation you're going to run into where you might not have your firearm, you might not be able to get to it, or you might lose it, and you'll have to go hands-on. So I think you should do both, and it depends on, like I said, what type of instructor you want. You seek them out and you get the training you got. It's not that expensive. You can learn things and you can just progress on your own. And you could get a base of something and then you could just take it from there. And some things you can self-taught. I'm telling you this because I know an array of different things. I don't fixate on one thing. You know, I know bits of everything. I incorporate that together so it can work for me. Am I sounding like you understand what I'm saying?
Yes. Yeah, you're definitely touching upon some of the things that black people should be aware of when it comes to education and firearms and how to apply it. So that's definitely something that that is definitely interesting to some of the listeners out there. Some of the other questions I want to touch upon is, what are some of the challenges of black gun ownership in the state of Connecticut that they might go through as being a gun owner and stuff of that nature?
It's not, like I said, not that many. If you're seeking someone of color to instruct you, it's not that many. I'm going to speak on this area where we are. I think it might be one other than me, and that's just being generous. I'm not even for sure. And if it is one, he's quiet. I don't think anyone is more outgoing than me. I was the first FFL holder, Afro-American holder in the state of Connecticut. I know that for sure. Now, it might be two now. I might have gave somebody the idea. I don't know. But for sure, when I started doing this over a year ago, October 2020, I was the only one. You know, I was the only one in the whole state of Connecticut. I have people buy firearms from me from far as Stanford, so that's what that's telling you. It's obvious nobody of color was down that way, and that's southern part of Connecticut. Like on the New York border, yeah. And we all up here on the Rhode Island border. We all way north. So you think about that. It's people. You guys gotta search for them. I'm not telling anybody to come to me, you know. But I'm just telling you, if that's what avenue you want to go, you gotta research it. It's slim to none. So you don't have a wide array of instructors to pick. So you just gotta pick who you entrust and who you think will be a good fit for you.
Mm. Okay. How are people are able to contact you if they would like to get training or purchase a firearm?
My website is BMC. This is all small case letter. BMCfirearms.com. You can go on there. I have courses outlined on there. I have all the weaponry you see there, all the firearms you see there, and accessories is what I have in stock now. If you don't see something that you want on my website, give me a call. And I will find it for you. My email is bmcfirearms@gmail.com. And my contact number is 860-501-5819.
All right. Also, do you happen to have some of the information about the NAGA, about for those that do ha already have their blue cards or their permits in the state of Connecticut or and beyond, that they'll be able to
NAGA.
apply for
Yeah,
them as well?
yeah, you can just go on a website. That's the only way you can really apply. If you just go on a website of Afro American Rifle Association, it'll put you straight to NAGA and it'll explain what NAGA is. That's the best way. That's the best thing I could tell you. Instead of me to explain it to you, people learn more and they can get more information by looking at it. So it'll explain history of NAGA, what they're about, of, and they have different chapters of. And speaking on that, there's only one legit chapter I know up here in this part of the Northeast, and they're in Windham, I think. Windham, a guy, the president, actually a friend of mine. Of so if you want to get that information, you have to just email me and I'll get it for you. I don't have it offhand right now, but they do a lot of courses down there too. I'm part of them too, but I'm just, it's not a NAGA up this way. So, they're like an hour away, but they're the, as far as I'm concerned, the only legit chapter. I think it's like three in Connecticut, but his chapter is the Northeast chapter, actually. It's the only one that's active. Where they when you can they have like core classes, they have courses you can go to, of you can meet, people of color. And it's, there's other nationalities part of this. Like, don't get it twisted. NAGA is not just for Afro Americans. It was founded by Afro Americans. It's like NRA. NRA was founded by Caucasian people, but it was for everybody per se. But NAGA is for everybody. It's just founded by Afro Americans and it teaches you Afro American history. Okay, so it's not just for Afro Americans. We're not like that. We want everybody to share and learn about Afro Americans and learn about our history. So it's for everybody, but it's just founded by Afro Americans and it teaches Afro American history and our culture. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yes, it makes I hear you loud and clear, and it makes perfect sense, and I find that very interesting myself. Also, I also want to ask you a final question. What type of firearms should a novice shooter use to improve the accuracy at the range, and why?
Of okay, if you're gonna do range shooting and practice shooting, you want a full frame pistol. Right now
What is
with
a
the
wait? Can we slow it down a little bit? What is a full frame pistol for those that might not know that are two or that are not
Oh, I'm
2A
sorry.
like that? Like, I'm
A
not as
full
2A savvy as you are, so please
okay.
elaborate a little bit more.
A full frame pistol is a 4-inch pistol, 4 inches or more. That of that's the size pistol that people like an armed security guard would have, law enforcement would have, because it's not
Okay.
concealed. It's in a holster. It's visible. So that's a full frame pistol. When you get to people like civilians who's carrying on a person, then they'll go into a smaller frame pistol, like 3 inches, and that's a concealed pistol. That's something you want and you don't want anyone to see.
Okay. And
But
thank you for clarifying.
you're welcome. But you can practice with anything. Why I would suggest is it depends on what you practice. If you're practicing for a sport, I would use a full frame pistol, which can be anything as long as it's a 4-inch barrel. If you're practicing for concealment and home and regular defense, I would just go with a subcompact and practice with that. So it's not a universal weapon to practice with. It depends on what you're seeking. If you're seeking this oh, I gotta say, if you're seeking if you're seeking this for sport and professional shooting, like sports shooting, performance shooting, then I would go with a full frame 4-inch barrel. If you're seeking this for self protection and concealment carry, I would go with what I'm going to carry realistically, which would be a subcompact weapon, which would be 3 inches. So it depends on what you're trying to achieve and do.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that. I was just more or less saying that somebody was, I don't want to say straight off the street, but someone who doesn't have no clue about firearms from left to right, who just wants to start to learn it. Like, what is a good gun for them to
Well,
start off? Start off.
I would start with a
I'm sorry.
22 caliber. A 22 caliber And like I said, if you're looking for, look, if your goal is to be able to carry on your person for concealment and self-defense, I would buy 22, but buy a subcompact 22. They make 22s full size, and they make them subcompact, just like any other weapon. And the reason why I said 22 is two reasons why. And like I said, I'm always gearing towards the present and the future. Presently, right now, 22 is the only inexpensive ammo. So you, if you're looking for, economically and something that you can afford, a 22 is the right thing to use. And if you're a new shooter and you want to get acclimated with a pistol, get comfortable with it, it's a good caliber to start with, because when you get into a 9 millimeters, the recoil, the sound, the feel when you fire that weapon is totally different. I mean, it's like night and day. So you start with a 22, which is less recoil, but it gets you acclimated with all the functions of the weapon, how to hold it, the experience of shooting it, and how it, how it functions, how it fires around. You learn all those basics and fundamentals, and then you can step up and get you a 9 millimeter, which is, has more recoil. Same weapon though, but just more recoil, and it's louder. And you can still shoot the 22. I have 22s that I still shoot for the practice with, and I do my courses with 22s. I start them out, they qualify at 22, and then I let them shoot a 9 millimeter just so they can know what the recoil is like. And they're like, wow. And there's a reason why I do that, because when they go out to buy their first firearm, this is for self-protection, they're going to buy a 9 millimeter. They're not going to buy a 22. So at least they know what's going to happen when they shoot this weapon. They won't be surprised. That's why I do that.
Thank you for your insight, and thank you for explaining that so that
You're welcome.
people can understand what you're talking about from a full frame rifle, or not right, full frame pistol, and understanding the difference, and what is the difference from a 9 millimeter to a 22, and how is it to feeling to a novice user. Thank you for clarifying that.
You're welcome.
With that being said, I definitely want to conclude our show, but I definitely would love to have you back on. And that with that being said, I would like to give a special thanks to our guest, Mr. Rhodes, for stopping by and educating the black community on firearm safety in the state of Connecticut. I would also like to give a salute to the Black Love Matter Network, Solidarity Crew, who's doing what they do best statewide with policies. I see what you're doing, and I really like it. I also want to send some birthday love or born day love to my grandmother, who is 37 backwards, which is 73. If you have any needs with your child and they're a little bit behind and need support, please reach out to Mother Ajwa on State Street. Also, she also creates very, very great vegan food that is very slamming, which is Idle Vital, from her husband, which is named Father Bijou, which is from lasagna, soups, and salads. This brother brings it right here, brings the soul of the continent of Africa right here to New London. If you want to know more, please order or email at onepieceworks@gmail.com. Also, I am still recruiting and looking for donations for upcoming event, Meet the Candidates for New London, hosted by the New London Lions Club. With that being said, I would like to say thank you for attending our show, and have a blessed day.